bail in many instances can be an aspect of predatory lending to a captive population. It's a major industry, $14 billion a year. And what they're able to do is post bond up front if you don't have it for a fee and interest. Okay, so say you've got a $10,000 bail and the bond can post up $1,000. That $1,000 is charged to you, okay, whether you're guilty or innocent. So even if you go through your court case and you get found not guilty, then you still got to pay that money up. And depending on how large the bail is, people can be found innocent and years later can still be paying off the cost of their agreement to the bonding industry.
Michael Gilliland is the board chair of Chattanooga Organized for Action, one of the founding organizations of a group called CALEB, Chattanooga in Action for Love, Equality, and Benevolence. Today, we discuss CALEB's first initiative in Chattanooga to create a community bail fund. The fund addresses one of the most inequitable aspects of our justice system, the cash bail system. It's a system that is out of date, only marginally effective, and can trap many of our most vulnerable citizens in debt for the rest of their lives. This is the Camp House Podcast, and I'm your host, Matt Busby. Well, Michael, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So my guest today is Michael Gilliland. He is the board chair of CALEB. Is that how we're...
Chattanooga Organized for Action.
Okay.
We're a member organization in CALEB.
Okay, so the board chair of Chattanooga Organized for Action, but we are going to be talking about CALEB today. And CALEB stands for, let me try this, Chattanoogans Aligned for Love, Equality, and Benevolence.
Pretty close.
Chattanooga's
in action for love, equality, and benevolence.
Okay, Chattanooga's in action for love, equality, and benevolence. All right, so you know, I'd love for, before we get into that, talking about CALEB, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself. How long have you lived in Chattanooga? Do you have a family? And where do you live?
Yeah. So I'm a born and bred Chattanooga, and I've been here all my life. My family's got pretty deep roots in the area. And so I do have a family, me and my wife, and we live in the wonderful historic neighborhood of Orchard Knob. So I never plan on leaving it. I love the neighborhood and the people. Love East Chattanooga.
Well, that's great. Where did you grow up in Chattanooga?
What I term is generally the white suburbs around. So Hickson and Red Bank, Middle Valley. My father was a Pentecostal pastor when I was growing up out in Middle Valley.
Wow.
So.
Yeah, I've commented a few times. So like when I moved to Chattanooga in 2010, you know, we've lived downtown our entire lives, our entire time we've been here. And I remember the first time I drove up to the lake to Chester Frost. And there's at one point on that drive where you can actually see how big Middle Valley is. It is massive up there. Like it's a lot of property, a lot of houses.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so you are a part of COA and Chattanooga Organized for Action. But recently, I think it was within the last maybe year to 18 months, you guys helped create CALEB. And so I'd love for you to tell us the history of that organization. Like, what is it? And then we're going to get into a very specific project.
Sure. So I think to frame CALEB and the reason why it's here, talk about the need for an organization like CALEB.
Yeah.
Chattanooga has a lot of awesome activist history, a lot of organizing and grassroots folks doing a lot to change the city. What we don't have is a history of really broad-based community organizing, especially within faith communities here. I mean, faith communities of all types of faith play a massive part in Chattanooga, much more than in other cities. And yet, coming out of that background, I know that a lot of churches don't even do a really good job of working with each other within their own denominations, much less outside with other denominations, and heaven forbid, collaborating effectively long-term with community organizations or organizations like labor unions. And it's because we don't have that history that it's uncomfortable for folks. You know, it's easier if we get around a table and you get five people around a table, somehow you come up with six different opinions in Chattanooga. And it's easy for us to find out what we disagree about, not so much to find out what we agree about.
Yeah.
So the goal of CALEB is to build a broad table of committed, accountable organizations to each other that find out what they agree about, relating to social change, issues in the city, and building power, enough power in order for us to really begin to be able to affect the city we live in. Yeah. So that's the goal of Caleb. We took the example of NOAA in Nashville, the organization Nashville Organized for Action and Hope. They've been around for about 6 years, and they've been able to build a strong coalition organization of 62 different organizations, yeah, over 40 of them faith communities, and they can pack 2,000 people in a room. When you can pack 2,000 people in a room all saying the same thing around an issue, then your possibility for change becomes a lot greater.
Yeah, so this is not just faith-based communities. This is other organizers, other bodies of organizations within Chattanooga.
That's right. So specifically organizations that are membership-based organizations.
Okay. I think I've heard you describe it this way before, and I could be wrong, but really what you guys created with COA, Chattanooga Organized for Action, is really you're organizing individuals, whereas Caleb is much more an organization of organizations.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, I know, so how long ago was that Caleb started?
I think the original meetings were about 2 years ago.
Okay. But it's really been within the last sort of year that you guys have been asking the question, like, what is it that we want to sort of hone in on as an organization, as really our first project? And what I you know, love to hear the way you describe the history and creating Caleb and the need for Caleb is, I mean, it really was going to take an issue, I think, to really help Caleb grow, right? Like, it's one thing to get organizations together in a room, but when you have an issue that you're focused on, suddenly more people are going to come to the table and are going to be more participatory, just because you're moving, right? The sort of inertia.
We need to define possibility.
Yes, yes, that's a good way of putting it. So talk about the process of how you guys sort of began to dream and imagine and throw stuff up on a board of what your first sort of issue you're going to be tackling in Chattanooga was going to be.
Really, more than anything else, it actually has to do from the network of similar organizations around Tennessee. Working with the Gamaliel Foundation, which is a community organizing foundation out of Chicago that helped to back and support the growth of NOAA, similar organizations like this are being created in Knoxville and Memphis with MICA. And it's out of those partnerships and talking with people all across the state that we got introduced to an organization called Just City in Memphis.
Okay.
And they are a criminal justice advocacy group filled up with former public defenders, attorneys, people in the criminal justice system. And they reached out to us, just letting us know about the possibility of establishing a community bail fund. They were the ones that spearheaded the development of similar funds in Memphis and Nashville to great effect. And so the original introduction with the executive director, Josh Spickler, coming to Chattanooga, meeting with community leaders, that was sort of the catalyst for really getting our hands into the dirt on this.
Okay. Yeah, so the very first issue that Caleb is now taking on is kind of what the topic of this podcast is going to be about, and that is creating a community bail fund. Now, recently, Michael, we had you at an event that we had at the Camp House talking about the community bail fund, and I think what was surprising to me in that talk was the amount of time you spent talking about the history of bail funds in general. I would love for you to give that, you know, I think it was only like 5 minutes, but talking about the history of cash bail and how odd and unique of a situation it is in the United States compared to the rest of the world at this point.
Sure. It is odd. At this point, there are only really two countries in the world that continue to use money cash bail and a commercialized bail system, and that's the United States and the Philippines. And there's a reason for that, because wealth-based detention is understood around the rest of the world to be depriving people without means of the opportunity to achieve adequate justice. Mm-hmm. Bail in the United States started as a way just to guarantee people to come back to court. It was sort of a surety that was put down so that make sure that they, once they're arrested or cited, that they would actually come to the court date. What it has morphed into, especially since the 80s and the development and growth of mass incarceration and a huge increase in the pretrial population in jails, has been a large commercial industry that's able to loan, get major fees for being able to help post ever-increasing amounts of bonds, and it's also been widened since the 80s in order to allow for community safety, to increase the amount of bonds or to deny bonding. So it sounds good. What it actually means in practice is that you have a massive number of people growing around the country that are kept in jail without being convicted of any crime. Yeah. I mean, and on any given night, 450,000 to 500,000 people are in jail in the United States and haven't been convicted of any crime. They're not there because a court or a jury says that they're guilty. They're there because they don't have the money to get out.
Yeah. So 500,000 people any given night in America are spending the night in jail just because they don't have the cash to be able to get out right now.
Yeah, we say that the American justice system is based on the concept of innocent until proven guilty. But if you're jailed until proven innocent, that becomes a much harder measure of you being able to achieve any sense of justice or equity or fairness within the justice system.
Right.
And what we see is that a number of people, a large percentage of people, are willing to plead guilty in charges before seeing a court court judge or a jury for the purpose of just being able to get out.
Yeah. I keep going along that thought, because to me, as somebody who, you know, I had the fortune of never having to be put in jail or anything like that, or being in any kind of situation where I'm anywhere close, to me, that just sounds so illogical that somebody would actually plead guilty to a crime that they're not guilty of just to get out. So I kind of would love for you to walk us through, you know, why somebody would do that. Because I think you kind of have to hear that to understand why this is such a huge problem for the people living right here in Chattanooga in our community, and why it's become such a massive poverty trap for people as well.
And that has to go with the conditions of the county jail more than anything else. I mean, our county jail is so overpopulated based off of what it was originally designed for. On any given night, you've got 150 people over capacity, often sticking people in shower stalls because they don't have enough room for them. Horror stories. Bradley County's jail just last year, all across the police communication, one night it was said that the police officers, if they were to arrest anybody, they'd have to keep them in their cars because there wasn't any space available within the jail. And so these conditions and the overwhelming nature of it lead to a massive level of abuse. Mm-hmm. And really, it is a human rights crisis at the county jail.
Yeah.
And those conditions, being in those conditions for everybody involved, it's a dehumanizing experience. Massively. So when people are there, if they can't make bond, and they're there anywhere from 10 to 14, sometimes longer, extra days in that condition, when all they have to do is being able perhaps to negotiate a plea deal for a lesser charge, a lot of folks sometimes don't understand the consequences or upfront they're willing to pay of what that record is going to mean.
Right.
And so people are put in a massively unfair situation.
Right.
So that's one reason. Now add on to that the condition of people who are getting by, working paycheck to paycheck, and all of a sudden they find themselves in jail without the opportunity to get out. 3 days in jail can ruin somebody's life, studies show. And this goes to loss of job or employment, the lack of a caregiver in the household, lack of access to adequate medication. A whole host of things can be compounded that makes life insufferable or almost impossible, not only for you once you get out, but also for that network of family and friends that you're cut off from.
Yeah.
So people are put in this position, and that's the choice that they're making.
So a lot of people living paycheck to paycheck, they literally just can't afford to spend more than one night in jail, and so they end up pleading out to some of these charges. And I mean, you mentioned this just a second ago, but it sounds like a lot of people don't understand or realize the long-term impact of what these charges can mean for them when it comes to employment, when it comes to finding a job. So they end up with stuff on their record that they're probably not even guilty of. But because so much of their life is dictated by, you know, living paycheck to paycheck, the tyranny of the current moment, because of the economic situation, they don't have the opportunity to really think about those long-term consequences.
That's right. And a lot of, unfortunately, especially in a lot of working class communities around Chattanooga, there's an expectation that this is part of life. This is something that people go through. And so the idea of having clean records isn't considered that much of a possibility.
Right, right. The fact that people have to plea out to get out of jail as early as possible and then come back for court dates later, I think that's a huge piece of the problem, is that we have so many people in Chattanooga who currently have criminal records who may not even be guilty of the stuff that's on their record. I think the other piece of this, too, is just the bail industry in general. And so I'd love for you to talk about I'm just going to say it. I want to say that this is a sinister industry. What is so sinister about it? I think it does provide a very good economic function for a society. However, it's at this point, it's bloated and it takes advantage of people. What is it? How is this a poverty trap, is the question I'm asking.
That's a really good question. There's a lot of recent stories and information that helped to shed light on it. I would recommend anybody to look up the article from the New York Times called The Bail Trap, to describe what the cycle of bail and imprisonment can do to people.
Yeah, that's great. We'll put a link to that in the show notes.
So the bail industry gets to operate with a stunning lack of real oversight. And we talk about predatory lending in the larger community and the damage that it does, but bail in many instances can be an aspect of predatory lending to a captive population. It's a major industry, $14 billion a year. And what they're able to do is post bond up front if you don't have it, for a fee and interest, okay? So say you've got a $10,000 bail, and the bond can post up $1,000. That $1,000 is charged to you, okay, whether you're guilty or innocent. So even if you go through your court case and you get found not guilty, then you still got to pay that money up. And depending on how large the bail is, people can be found innocent and years later can still be paying off the cost of their agreement to the bonding industry.
I actually remember you at this event we had you speak at. You talked about, very specifically about a young man's story where that was exactly the case. It was a young man in Baltimore. I'd love for you to share that. But essentially, you know, he took a huge bond to get out, and then he was proven innocent in his court case, and he's still paying off that bond.
Yeah, I mentioned the Demaray at Tarver case in Maryland. In 2008, Tarver, then 18, was arrested along with a few friends. He says when a handgun was found in his Nissan Maxima along with some pot. Tarver maintains that he didn't know about the gun and that it was put in a handbag in the back of a car by a minor who was carrying it. He faced 3 possession charges in the incident. The main arresting officer in Tarver's case was the now-notorious Fabian Laurent, who was fired from the Baltimore Police Department earlier this year after a string of incidents and complaints about his conduct that date as far back as 2006. Weeks after Laurent arrested him back in 2008, Tarver's charges were dropped too. He spent a couple of days behind bars while his mother, Jeanette Howard, came up with a down payment to post a $27,500 bail bond fee. "I'd put down a down payment on a house or start a business," he tells me in a downtown cafe as his 2-year-old daughter scribbles gleefully over a page of notes about her father's mounting bail debt. Instead of doing that, he's paying that $30,000 and counting in $100 biweekly or monthly installments to Fred Frank Bail Bonds, a stone's throw away. He's been delivering the money these days, usually in person, in cash, to their offices across from Courthouse East for the past 8 years in an effort to pay off the 10% bail bond fee from his first and only arrest. His bail was set at $275,000 and a 10% non-refundable fee they couldn't afford. Tarver's case is an example of how the bail system operates outside of the courts and is allowed to do so by the states. This is something that at this point he's not behind the charge itself. This isn't something that the court is doing. This is the private negotiation for what it took to get him out.
Yeah, it's such a tragic story, but I think it's key to highlighting why this is such an issue for people right here in our community. So you know, just to recap that, we literally have people in the city of Chattanooga who are being arrested for different issues. Who knows what? It doesn't really matter. And before they're proven guilty or innocent, they're having to take out massive loans, essentially, from bail bondsmen to get out. And regardless of, and then they go to court. And when they go to court, they're proven innocent. It doesn't matter. That fee from the bail bondsman is something they have to pay back no matter what. And it could take them years and years and years to pay that back.
And I want to highlight at this point that wealth-based attention doesn't actually make communities safer. Yeah. The same crime that can be committed by people with greater means, it doesn't preclude them from getting out of jail.
Right.
If you can post the bond, you can get out. And so it creates this real stark injustice, or two separate justice systems for the poor and the wealthy.
Yeah.
If you can make it, then you can get out until your court date, and you actually have the privilege of presumed innocence. And if not, then all of these hurdles, both before your case and after your case, get piled on into making the perspective of equal justice illusory.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned it earlier, too. You compared this to the predatory lending. And what's amazing about that is, when I interviewed Joda Tongnatnua from Metro Ideas about this, in their studies, they found that the most likely person to take out a predatory loan was a working African-American mother. Somebody who's working full time, but they just couldn't make ends meet. Like, that's the most likely statistically person to do that. What's amazing about this is that just based on the sheer number of arrests and the way that our society works, the most likely person to take out a bail bond loan would be an African-American male, right? So the terrifying thing about this, I think, for our city and our community right now is the fact that there are children in our city who have a mother trapped in a poverty trap of predatory lending, and they have a father who is in this poverty cycle of paying off a bail bondsman, right? Like, and then we wonder, why is there generational poverty within our city? These kids will never have a chance to get ahead because their parents are just so buried themselves. So I think that just highlights the issue. Now, let's shift this conversation from talking about how sort of horrible of a system we have right now to this community bail fund that Caleb is actually enacting that has already been established in Memphis. They're working on this in Nashville now. They've seen great success. So Michael, why should our listeners be really excited and get involved in this community bail fund?
So before we get to that, yeah. I would like to say that the money or cash bail system is being challenged all over the country. All right, there are better ways to do pre-trial services. Washington, D.C., for instance, has created a whole new set of pretrial services with paid staff. They've been able to cut costs while at the same time getting people more often to their court date. They do that not by cash bail, which they've eliminated, but actually by a phone call reminding people that to show up to trial. That they've shown that is actually more likely to get a person to show up to their court date than the entire clunky system of cash bail that we have. California just recently has done away with cash bail for a majority of offenses. And that's not just in places like Boston or California. Just earlier this year, Atlanta's municipal courts did away with bail for a majority of offenses. So this can be changed. It can be made better, and there can be more equal access of justice given to poor and working families. But at the moment, we can't wait on that. We can't wait on reforms to fix what is truly a broken and unequal system if we can do something about it. And that's the wonder and the benefit of community bail funds. Community bail funds are practiced in over 20 states around the country. And just as an explanation, community bail fund would be a revolving fund account that for money donated in, that money gets used to post bonds for people who are indigent or who can't pay for themselves, are unlikely to be able to get out on their own accord.
Yeah.
And with an agreement with the bail fund, as long as they show back up on their trial date, that money comes back into the revolving account to be used for the next person. So there are some wonderful examples of this, but I particularly want to highlight Nashville. Nashville's Community Bail Fund has been in operation for 2 years, and what they've done is pretty remarkable. Since their start, they've been able to get over 400 people in Nashville out of jail.
Yeah.
They've posted what, over the course of 2 years, comes out to $1.2 million in bonds. And the most remarkable thing is that over half of people that have been held by the bond, by the Community Bail Fund this year in 2018, over half of them have had all of their charges dropped and dismissed.
Ah, that's incredible. Yeah, so that's amazing. And so instead of, you know, pleading to something so they can get out, get back to work, take care of their families, you know, whether that's elderly parents or kids or whatever, this Community Bail Fund is able to get them out to where they can go back to their regular lives, show up for their court date like anybody, like they should, like anybody else should, and then over half these people's charges have been dismissed. Whereas you can bet a good percentage of them probably would have pleaded out if they had to.
Yeah.
Just to get out.
So the Bail Fund creates an opportunity for individuals not to be thrown into the mechanics of the mass incarceration system.
Yeah.
And while we're looking and pushing, as we should, to end money bail and wealth-based detention around the country and in our city, this becomes an opportunity, an avenue, to get our hands into the work right now, to get people out, and to help to build community with those who need it most.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you guys just started this process, I think, like 3 months ago, right? About 3 months ago, 6 months ago?
Yeah, I'd say about 6 months with the initial conversations.
And I know you guys' initial push started less than a month ago, but your guys' initial push, Caleb's, was to raise $20,000 to get this started for 2019. And, you know, where are you guys at in terms of fundraising for that?
So on October 18th, we had a public launch meeting. It was very well attended. 150 people came out. Very diverse crowd, and they got to hear about the underlying reasons for the bail system, the reasons for reform, and got to hear about the experience in Nashville. So our initial goal, as you said, was $20,000. We were able to get commitments for that $20,000 and to meet that in a week.
Within 1 week?
Within 1 week.
Oh, that's amazing. So
it is amazing. And so our next goals are laying the founding work to coordinate volunteers to be able to get this off the ground and start bailing people out by the end of this year.
Yeah.
Our expectation working with the Public Defender's Office is that we will be able to put down bond for a client or an individual by the end of 2018. Our next goals in 2019 are to capitalize this fund up to $100,000 and to make it its own organization with staff like they do in Nashville. In Nashville, right now, they're bonding 9 people out a week. I mean, it is
amazing.
It's an amazing example of success that we want to pattern and show. And it's wonderful to get people out. It's wonderful to be able to put down the resources and organize the community together for such an obvious common good. But it's also a wonderful thing to be able to hear the stories of these individuals and to connect them and connect what's happening in the criminal justice system locally to the broader public so that it provides an opportunity for us to be more engaged.
Right. Yeah, I think that's what's going to be so exciting about the next step in this whole process is gathering stories of the people you're going to be bailing out. And I think that's really what's going to drive this organization forward, because so many people do not have any experience. I mean, if you are not somebody who interacts with the justice system at all, like you won't, unless you get called for jury duty, like this is a world into and of itself that you're not going to experience, you're not going to see. And I think what's going to be amazing is these stories are going to provide a lens for people to see the internal workings of our justice system that they wouldn't otherwise see. So I'm really excited for this to get going and for you guys to be able to share these stories. So Michael, as you guys have been developing this, and you've been really talking to the justice system, from the police to the judges to the public defender's office, you know, have you experienced resistance, or have you experienced excitement and support? What's been the reaction here in Chattanooga from the justice system side of this?
I'll tell you, I've been involved with Chattanooga Organized for Action since 2011. I've never worked on a campaign in which there is more vocal support from more avenues across the spectrum than this project right here.
That's really
Everyone
exciting.
Understands that what we currently have is not working.
Yeah.
And so this project has been something that we've received remarkable support from. I mean, at our public launch meeting, we had statements of support from county commissioners and from the public defender's office. And so it's almost eerie the amount of support that we've gotten without any broad pushback. But there is a certain amount of pushback that is likely to come from the bail industry itself. And I think the most often concern that we get is from community members who are worried that people are going to be released.
Yeah.
And sort of the concern of community safety. And so I think people have real concerns about community safety, and those concerns are often valid. But we want to reiterate that that's this true. System of wealth-based detention is not actually making our communities safer.
Yeah.
It's actually hurting our communities and members of our communities, trapping them in a system of mass incarceration that's going to have damaging results for our community for a long time moving forward. We have to, in order to make our communities safer, what we need to be pursuing is more active justice in our system. And we hope that the Bail Fund can be a part of that.
You know, well, Michael, you know, how can people connect with Caleb? And even, I know you guys are still accepting donations for this fund, right?
That's right. Absolutely.
Fundraising, how can we do that?
A key part. We're more than happy to accept donations as we're building this out. So checks and money orders can be sent to our P.O. Box 11202. Chattanooga, Tennessee, 37401. We've also got a Facebook fundraiser that we're launching this week and building out a website to be able to accept online donations that should be out at least by January, if not before.
Yeah. So does Caleb have a Facebook page?
Caleb does.
Okay, great. We'll put a link to that in the show notes where you guys can connect with them and really like their page and follow along with what's going on as well as donate. So, Michael, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Well, first I want to give a big thank you to Michael for taking time for this interview, but I also want to offer an apology to both Caleb and to you, my listeners. We recorded this interview back at the end of 2018, and for a variety of reasons, I kept pushing back the release to this moment. Now, as an update to this interview, I talked with Alan Shropshire, who was one of the folks involved with Caleb and the Bail Fund, along with Michael. Now, Caleb has not been able to act quite as quickly as they'd hoped when we recorded this interview, but they do have their initial money needed to begin bailing folks out of our local jail, and they should be active within the next 2 weeks. So keep an eye out for that, because when they do bail out their first person, they hope to make sure the community knows about it. As we discussed at the end of the episode, the best way to stay up to date on the work of the Bail Fund is to go on Facebook and like the Caleb page. And you can find a link to that in the show notes of this episode. Well, thank you all for listening to the Camp House podcast. The Camp House exists to steward the common good in Chattanooga through hospitality, culture, and education. And this podcast is here to keep you connected, informed, and inspired by what is happening in your community. Now, if you're listening to this on the day it is being released, Thursday, March 21st, we do have an event you may be interested in. Tonight is the next edition of our Theology on Tap series and will feature British theologian Craig Bartholomew. His lecture will be titled Signposts for a Divided World, Where is God in Contemporary Culture? We're excited to host Dr. Bartholomew and want to give a special thank you to North Shore Fellowship and Mission Chattanooga for making that possible. Tickets to tonight's event are free and the doors are at 6:30 p.m. and the lecture will get started at 7. If you want to stay up to date about everything we have going on at the Camp House, then please follow us on all the channels, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and you can also check out our website at thecamphouse.com. And from there, you can share this podcast episode. So thank you all for listening. And the next time you hear the Camp House podcast, it will be a preview of what I am calling Season 4 of the podcast. We really haven't done seasons in the past, but I'm going to switch to that format in order to help focus the content and provide some more natural breaks that will allow me to step back and focus on other areas. Now, season 4 will feature a new audio structure that I'm really excited about, and the theme of season 4 will be around housing and development right here in Chattanooga. So until then, I hope you all have a great day. Get out and enjoy the sunshine, and take care.